You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, April 3rd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live-ish steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA, where everyone tries to be just like Hoosiers because they're the nicest of all people. I don't know why that's so stuck in my craw about the Hoosiers. It just is. Folks, it's Casual Friday. Let me tell you how casual this Friday is. It's so casual, I'm not even here. But the show is live. What? None of this computes. You're listening to me live right now. Or perhaps you're listening to me after the fact. But there are people listening to me live, even though I'm not here saying these words right now as you listen. I know it's confusing, but I've actually started my vacation. Matt and Mike are in the office right now playing this. They're not operating me. They're playing a recording of my voice. We have this technology here in the office where we can record things and play them back. On the program today, Cliff Schechter. We spoke yesterday, but it's all fresh for today. Assuming something catastrophic hasn't happened. Some major event. We even mentioned the potential for an Iran deal yesterday, and it may be announced already today. Don't know. Nevertheless, Cliff and I will be talking about this week's of news in just a moment. And then, following Cliff and I, Matt and Michael will do the better half live, ladies and gentlemen, as a way of saying, see ya, we're going on vacation for 5 days. For me, it's six. What are you going to do? I'm the boss. For Michael, let's be honest, it's even arguable. It's hard to be able to... only Matt is still in the office right now, which just gives you an example, which I think just proves what I'm saying. So, Michael, yes. Now, right now, I can tell you what's happening. I'm predicting the future, even though you think this is happening now. Right now, Michael is shaking his head, and he's getting angry. And Matt is looking at him and laughing because I'm saying this, and he's hearing, Michael, hear me say this. Now, Michael just laughed because I predicted how angry he had just gotten. But he's about to get more angry because my point was that I am on vacation. Matt is not, and it's always arguable that Michael can go on vacation. Because you need to take a vacation from something, right? And it's sort of, that's the point. But Matt and Michael will do the better half of the program. I really wish I could have been here to see the look on Michael's face as I was saying that, or he was hearing it for the first time. But I'm also happy not to be here. Next week, no show on Monday. But we've got a great lineup for you for the rest of the week. We've got Gerald Posner, God's Bankers, a story of the Vatican as a bank. Ryan Cooper, how your local jail became hell. Joan Fitzgerald talking about pricing the priceless, and Adam Green from the PCCC. Keith Whalew, professor of history from Princeton, on the political history of pain. All fascinating stuff for members next week. Aaron Magruder, the guy who wrote The Boondocks. Patton Oswalt. Tom Green, comedian from the archives. Jose Rivera from the archives, who wrote the Motorcycle Diaries screenplay. The Motorcycle Diaries, of course, were the diaries of Che Guevara. And also a comedian, Colin Quinn. That's for members. So next week's going to be a great week of shows, even though we won't even be here. That's what's called a vacation for us, but not for you guys. It's sort of like the opposite of what it's like when we're working here, where it's like, we're working, Michael's here, but he's not really. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, unless Michael has thrown fit and destroyed the broadcast computer, he's going to hear you laughing. We'll be talking to Cliff Schechter.
Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday, so casual, I'm not even here. I'm actually en route. I'm probably at my father's house getting ready to celebrate Passover. And who else
Pesach,
is...
Pesach, if you will.
Pesach. And who else is not here, too, with me? Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
That's right. I'm not here also. Magic. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm doing well. Are you kidding? I've already started my vacation. I'm feeling great.
It's awesome.
All right. We got a lot to talk about, though, even though neither one of us is here at this point. Let's start.
No, actually, where I am, while I'm not there, is I'm right now soaking in a hot tub in my $1,536.96 a night suite in Paris.
Oh, my.
I'm just kidding. That was Bob Menendez.
I was going to say, are you traveling with the senator? I mean, we should touch on this. I mean, look, I have no idea whether or not the guy is guilty or not, but the number of counts and the fact that that federal investigators are going for a bribery charge, which is a very high bar, and they only will indict you on that if they feel they can do it because they have lesser charges which could basically accomplish the same thing or similar things. This is Bob Menendez, it seems to me, not long for the Senate.
Yeah, I would say that too. First of all, there have been these kinds of rumors and talk for years. You know, you wonder sometimes if people are just sort of ginning up scandal for the sake of scandal. I always tend to assume with these things, it reminds me, obviously, some of the stuff went on when Bill Clinton was in the White House, that there may not be something illegal, but generally, if there's this much talk going on, there tends to be something unseemly.
Right.
It turns out that here it may be both. You have to add in another factor, which is he's from New Jersey, which if you're in from New Jersey and you run for office, I think right away we have to take odds, you know, 3 to 5, let's say, that you're going to be a crook. No, I'm kidding. I love you, New Jersey. But it does seem New Jersey and Illinois have a competition going and may have even both left Louisiana behind at this point, which is rather impressive. In terms of what he did, we were talking about Illinois, you know, you think of what Aaron Schock just resigned for, and some of this stuff sounds a little bit like that. It sounds like enjoying yourself a little bit too much and not reporting flights. There may be more here on Menendez, I don't know, but it sounds like, I'm talking not necessarily in the criminal sense, but in the general sense, it's almost like it's a broader cultural indictment of the Citizens United era, where it seems that you don't have to actually go out, as Republicans like to say anyhow, and certain Democrats, and, you know, spend all that time in the private sector and, you know, like a good American would. But these guys can actually get pretty rich and do pretty well, if not with their own money, with other people's money, while they're in office numerous ways. And, yeah, some of the stuff's illegal, but just the fact that some of it's borderline and, you know, some of it is allowed, some is not, there's some that's questionable. I think that, you know, what we're seeing right now has to speak to some of what's going on out there, and I'm sure there's a lot more in general. In terms of the bribery, I think you're right. There are 14 counts. Eight of them are bribery.
Yep.
If I remember correctly. So, you know, I'm not a
15
lawyer.
15 years in prison for each count, theoretically.
Wow. So that's bad. I'm not a lawyer. However, I did see The Wolf of Wall Street. And if Leonardo DiCaprio was speaking the truth in that movie, great movie, by the way, I remember him saying that for there to be you to be charged, there has to be a specific quid pro quo.
Yep.
It can't be a more generalized thing. So you're right. That is a high bar to cross. And if they don't generally do this stuff unless they think they're going to win, and if 8 of those are bribery, they must really think they have something. So no. I don't think he's going to be in the Senate long.
Sense of how much trouble I think he's in terms of, like, the chances of this prosecution being successful enough to put him in jail for an extended period of time. The last time the Department of Justice brought these charges was, I believe, nearly 30 years ago during Abscam, where they had them on videotape, right? I mean, so this shows a tremendous amount of confidence that they had the goods on him. And
yeah, I was going to even ask, because you know what I was thinking when I heard this. You know, the place I was talking about, this wonderful place, which I must find in Paris, and of course find a way to spend somebody else's money, because frankly I don't have enough for this place. But in addition to the $1,500 a night deal, the king bed, which we all expect in work area with the internet, of course, but the limestone bath with soaking tub and enclosed rain shower. That's pretty awesome. So right away I was thinking with that the hot tub thing, you ever see Charlie Wilson's War?
I didn't see that, but I remember.
It pretty much begins with him in a hot tub with a bunch of people, and there's some aggressive prosecutor from New York. People weren't sure what his name was. It was like Rudy Giuliani or something, who was trying to go after Charlie Wilson and indict him and get him on that. So, I'm just saying it has that sleazy corruption feel to it. Again, the man is innocent until he's proven guilty, but it really doesn't look good. And my guess is just because of the cloud that will surround him, he's going to have to leave the Senate. I mean, they're not supposed to leak things from this, but we all know how this has gone in recent years. There'll be plenty leaked from any investigation, and it'll just keep hitting him and nailing to the wall when the Democrats are trying to win a presidential election. Certainly Hillary Clinton, should she be the nominee or anyone else, a Democratic nominee, is not going to want him around. You've already got Amy Klobuchar returning money that she raised along with Bob Menendez. Amy Klobuchar is the senator from Minnesota. So that's the way this is going to go. No one's going to want him to touch anything or be near them, make any appearances with them, and that gets pretty tough after a while. So my guess is he will be gone. And that brings up, you know, just on the political side, an interesting dynamic, which I ask you here, Sam, which is, do you think a man by the name of Chris Christie, who most recently his Republican, his numbers were 25% approval and 47% disapproval among Republican primary voters, such that public policy polling, who had done these polls, said they were going to think of removing him from their polling, that it wasn't even wasn't worth bothering with anymore at this point. You think he tries to salvage himself in New Jersey and see, being that he's the power-hungry guy that he is, and see if he can't run for the U.S. Senate if he doesn't end up in prison himself?
No, because his polling in New Jersey is almost as bad.
Is it bad in New Jersey?
Oh, no, his polling in New Jersey has dropped like a lead balloon. I mean, this guy, and again, I think he's going to, you know, he's got just maybe he ends up, maybe it ends up being like a great, I don't know, sitcom like Menendez and Christie. And
get Torricelli back out, you know, out there.
They'll be sharing. Well, let me say there's two things I want to make, two points I want to make on this, and then I want to move on. One is that as far as that, whatever it is, the limestone bath and shower thing, I can't even sort of actually picture that. Although I remember going to David Cross's house in L.A. He was rented a place, and he had like a Roman bath where you would actually sort of walk in. I can't even remember what it was like, but it was pretty nice. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We hit our Indiegogo campaign numbers. We're going to make our stretch goal to send you to that hotel in Paris.
My God. If you do that, I'll report from that bathtub with the rain shower on for you guys if you send me there.
All right. Well, we'll put it into the mix. Let's put it that way.
Okay,
all right. The other thing, though, you mentioned Citizens United, and I want to just touch on this before we go, because part of the indictments have to deal with this sort of direct quid pro quo. Can you get the doctor? It was this eye doctor who was his friend, you know, I guess, in Florida. The eye doctor is going to pay for my hotel room. Hey, we need to have a Medicare. I mean, literally, they want to change like sort of national Medicare policy so that this guy could make, you know, I don't know how many more million, a couple.
Right.
I don't know. And there was a lot of that quid pro quo. Menendez would get his, I guess, college age girlfriends in. The guy was a 62-year-old married guy. Get his college age girlfriends in from foreign countries in exchange for whatever it is, you know, buy me a car.
The sleazy part of this,
right?
I was talking
but
about. Yeah.
But there also is that through this doctor's company, he directed $700,000 in corporate contributions to Majority PAC, which was a super PAC intended to help Democrats retain control of the Senate in 2014, and the doctor instructed the group to use. Oh, this is 2012. To use those contributions to aid Menendez's 2012 reelection campaign. So this is basically strikes right at the heart of, and boy, I hope Anthony Kennedy can pick up a newspaper and read it. Because this is a guy who said,
he was so right in what he said.
He said this doesn't even, there's no way this is even going to lead to the appearance of corruption. This seems to me to be direct corruption. Never mind.
Because they'll be completely independent of you. You won't be like appointing former staffers like Mitt Romney. I'm sure there are others. And Democrats, many
right.
of them. But I remember Mitt Romney's like, what was it, his finance guy or his previous campaign manager who was like, oh, well, he's now running the super PAC, but we don't talk to each other.
Right, of course.
You know, kind of, I mean, like the Anthony Kennedy is either the stupidest person alive, maybe. No, that's going a little too far with some of the others we've talked about, but he couldn't foresee this. I mean,
right.
it doesn't. You don't need to be a genie to be able to figure this out. It's such silliness, I guess, is all I can say. When you think about what he said and the naivete in what he said, that you have to believe he wasn't being honest, because it's that to think that all these people that travel in the same social circles and the rest, but suddenly won't talk to each other. And won't do things like this. I mean, again, Citizens United era here, you know, we're in it.
And we should say, I guess, the last the coda on this is that, you know, according to the right wing, Menendez was taken out because he was one of the most vocal Democratic opponents of a deal with Iran. And as we're recording this on Thursday, and it's unclear, you know, I haven't seen this, but there is now sort of rumors, it seems like it's happening, that there has been, and of course, by the time people listen to this, it'll be all over the place, that Iran and the P5 plus one have come to a deal, which involves, and this is, again, I'm getting out ahead of myself here a little bit, but can't build any new facilities for 15 years to enrich uranium. Most of the enriched uranium stocks they have already will be diluted or shipped abroad.
The rest of them, Bill Kristol will eat personally.
That's right. Bill Kristol will eat and send himself on an airplane flying into Tehran. But so basically, I mean, that's where we're at. The deal is going forward, and of course,
Seen this conspiracy stuff. I haven't seen that. That's amazing. So the people on the right are now defending Menendez,
They're just claiming this seems awful convenient, even though the investigation has been going on for 3 years. But look, when you're from Kenya, when you're a socialist, when you're going to get become president, I mean, we know that Obama's been playing the long, long game anyways. Probably
also,
50
when you're
years.
Harry Reid, and clearly the eye injury that you say you suffered while working out was the mafia punching you in the eye to make sure that you still did their bidding. I believe that's also out there in the Breitbart-like outlets.
Definitely.
So there's a lot going on, and Menendez, you're right. Yeah, it's amazing to me because, I mean, obviously I think he's terrible on foreign policy, and we'll be sad to not have him there when it comes to Iran, and particularly, again, the most ridiculous American policy we currently have running, which is our embargo of Cuba, or it's not really anymore. We're starting to move in the right direction. Menendez is one of the ones who wants to block that. And I think we should have somebody more progressive from New Jersey, certainly a pretty liberal state. But with that said, he still is overall liberal on a whole lot of issues, such that the right wouldn't like him, I'd be surprised that just on these things they'd defend him. And to be clear, I'm not saying I wish anything bad upon him. I hope he's innocent of all this and doesn't end up in prison. I wouldn't wish that upon almost anybody. Don't take my saying I'd rather have somebody more progressive there. I would, but this wouldn't be my chosen path of wanting him to leave. But such as it is, we'll see where it goes.
And, like we say, you will see where this goes, this whole Menendez Ghazi, or whatever.
Nice.
All right. So, but before we talk about Harry Reid, I don't think we've had a chance to even talk about the fact that he's not going to run. And we should mention that. We should also talk about the apparent ascension, undisputed, although there may be a little bit of dispute, of Chuck Schumer as the next Democratic Senate leader, depending on whether or not they're a majority or minority after 2016. Before we get to that, I want to talk about something that I don't think have had the opportunity to talk about on this program, and that is there were like three votes. Well, I want to talk about there's two different things going on in terms of the dynamic right now. Soon we're going to be following, you know, the clown car more intensely than we have been now. I'm not a huge horse race and politics guy, and I would love not to be able to talk about.
But you do have to be excited by the Ted Cruz.
Oh, definitely! I love that stuff.
He's now at 16%. He's moving up.
He's moving up, and I love it. But before we get there, what's been fascinating to me is here you have this Republican presidential primary. The Republicans, after their experience with Romney last time around, they did everything in their power to make sure that the season was shortened, right? Not elongated, for a couple of reasons. One, they wanted to shorten it so that physically shorten it so that they could bring up their convention so that their nominee could actually start spending general election money earlier, because Romney had run out of money over the course of a month or two in the summer and couldn't fight back against getting pounded by President Obama. They also didn't like how damaging it was to Romney. So they wanted to sort of sew this up for the establishment candidate earlier. So they have less debates. They've clustered these things. What's fascinating is that I think it's not going to work on either end. And no, let's talk about why it's starting so much earlier. Like, you've already got Jeb already damaged. I don't even know if he's an official candidate yet, but he's already been damaged.
Like, massively damaged. And the truth of the matter is that a whole lot hasn't even come out on him or really been sort of focused upon, like his business record and his dealings when it comes to, you know, Terry Schiavo, which
But I'm talking about damage by the Republican Party. I'm talking about what happened in Indiana this week, and I'm talking about Tom Cotton in that letter.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, first of all, that put him, the Tom Cotton letter, that's one of the big, you know, dividing lines. There's sort of the more business-oriented Republicans, you could call them, versus the more socially conservative. Again, they're all pretty much crazy, but there are some that put a little more emphasis on one or the other. That's how you get a Walmart, for example, saying to Asa Hutchinson, you better not sign this bill that's like the Indiana bill that will lead to potential discrimination and could lead to boycotts and the kind of approbation we've seen go in Mike Pence's direction. But you also have that same split among the dwindling number of realists, you know, of the George H.W. Bush ilk left in the Republican Party versus the neocons or the crazies, as they actually were literally known in the Reagan administration, who now are what we call the mainstream of Republican foreign policy thought. And one of those ruptures came over the Tom Cotton letter, as you say, because the reaction to that by one James Baker, who now I believe is 112 years old and has been in every Republican administration perhaps since Warren Harding, but he is a realist, and he, of course, served as Treasury Secretary under Reagan, and he was at the State Department under H.W. and Reagan, I believe. And he went and spoke at J Street, which is the more moderate version of AIPAC, by a lot more moderate. We could almost say the progressive version, and was, you know, very critical of Netanyahu, of this letter, for a variety of things, and that led a bunch of the neocons, Bill Kristol and some others. But again, while we've got Citizens United here, also Sheldon Adelson, who happens to have billions and billions of dollars and be a lunatic, who's actually come out openly for nuking Iran. And so he apparently got a message sent to Jeb, and so did Bill Kristol, who's considered a mainstream Republican figure these days, amazing as that is, and some of those other neocons, that if Jeb did not distance himself from Baker, they would be distancing themselves from him. And that Sheldon Adelson's billions of dollars would be distancing themselves from Jeb Bush, and he might even spend a lot of that money trying to defeat him. He's already used that threat against Rand Paul to get Rand Paul to back away from any foreign policy consistency he had. So, I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, there's so many pitfalls now, because you've got the Iowa caucuses, which shouldn't exist, but essentially are a percent of a percent of a percent. I mean, literally. Even within the Republican Party, you start off with a general crazy. Then you have a primary voter who's even crazier. But then you have a caucus goer who's even crazier than that. So it is the ultra-evangelical right wing of the Republican Party that controls Iowa, which means all these guys suddenly have to be concerned about what's going to happen there. Then you've got the big spenders like Adelson with their crazy agendas. You can't have them open up if Adelson wanted to, he could put $50 million, into a super PAC just to go after Jeb Bush or any other vehicle like that. So you've got that to worry about. And so these guys, it's amazing to watch, because it's a bunch of crazy people battling it out. And that's hurt Jeb Bush. And then what Mike Pence did in Indiana by supporting this discriminatory act, Jeb Bush and all the other Republicans came out for it originally, which is going to hurt them very much with most of the general public.
Jeb Bush tries to tack back from it, but you've now, the idea that, has he even officially declared? I don't know if he's officially
declared.
That's
not aware of.
But, at this point, the idea that he would have to be reminded of his neocon roots and then also be shown to actually be more socially conservative than the sort of the mainstream narrative wants to present of him. In March, by March of this year, is sort of stunning. I mean, and so the campaign has been elongated on the front end, and then with
because of the money people, and you need, you know, the sort of they call it the invisible primary, call it what you want, but you're lining up to land the support of key money people, because that is now such a disproportionately important part of the process. You're lining up to get the key, you know, operatives with the big names that shouldn't matter, because most of them have reputations well beyond their actual ability, except for the fact that that affects how the mainstream media reports on you and whether they'll give you a chance and say that you're, you know, somebody who can be, who people should pay attention to. And if anybody thinks that that doesn't matter, you know, ask Gary Johnson from the last Republican nominating session, or what's his name from Louisiana, whose name I've forgotten.
Jindal.
Romer. Was
oh, right, 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 right.
Yeah, who was basically ignored because, the media can choose to do that, ignore somebody or pay attention. I mean, there's a whole bunch of guys who are in single digits. So to say that it's just because those guys are in single digits is not being honest. If you're in single digits, but they in their minds, they decide you have a chance, or they want you to have a chance, they'll pay attention to you. And when I say mainstream media, there's a lot of that is conservative media, from your Fox News to your, you know, Weekly Standards and places like that. So all this stuff affects all this. And to think Jeb Bush can navigate this, he ran on the hard right when he ran for Florida. He was actually the right-wing Bush. His, you know, George W. was the more moderate of the two when they both ran for governor in Florida and Texas. Now he's suddenly tacked to the center, which he really hasn't. He just supports some actual educational standards, which I disagree with Common Core for other reasons. But the point being that people, the reason the Republicans don't like it, they don't want any testing at all. Immigration reform, again, that split with the business side of the Republican Party. And then when it comes to sort of at least tolerance on gay rights, it's actually become a defining issue. Who would have thought that? But it is, right, in the Republican Party, because the demographic these guys all need to appeal to is like, well, you know, the 18 to 54 people that shop, people that are generally have disposable income, who tend to be more moderate to liberal on social issues and not haters, frankly. And most, you know, what is it, 7 in 10 people now know somebody or friendly with somebody who's gay. That would be almost that entire group we're talking about. You know, so I mean, they're in a very difficult place. I'll say quickly, and I know I've been talking too long here, but basically they're in a place where the Democrats were about 20, 30 years ago, and the Democrats were ahead of where the public was, which nobody should apologize for on many of these issues, and Democrats had to appease, you know, and make their base happy while then appealing to a large mainstream of the country that often would say, we think segregation's okay, or mixed marriage shouldn't be allowed, or whatever, and, you know, and that's not 20 years ago, that's more like 40 or 50. But now the Republicans have to be able to somehow appeal to this crazy old white.
But it's different. You're right. I mean, it's basically the mirror image, right? Because
it's exactly the mirror image, yes.
Because it's trending away from them. And,
yep,
and the amazing thing about this is that they are dealing with two problems. It's trending away from them. And then you have, because of these super PACs, and because of all the money that is sloshing around on the right, it means that on the back end of the campaign, it's going to go on longer because, again, you know, Newt Gingrich et al., they all showed why they're, you know, from a personal standpoint as a candidate, there's value in you staying the race. And the reason why people couldn't do it is just they couldn't afford to do it. But now you've got these super PACs who are out there. So the money is – there's a lot less – the money is much less limited. And it also is to push certain issues. So they will finance somebody to go
around. The last election – you know, Rick Santorum doesn't exist if it's not for Foster Freeze.
Indeed.
10 million, you know, one on top of another, $10 million checks, you know, if you, you know, into this super PAC. And look at who these guys are we're talking about. If you talk about Sheldon Adelson, you talk about Foster Freeze, you talk about the Koch brothers, in those cases, we're talking about white guys, mostly from, you know, from either more conservative states, or maybe not in Sheldon Adelson's case, but he's you know, he's right-wing in numerous other ways. You know, the Koch family from Kansas originally, Foster Freeze from what is it, Wyoming. They're, you know, basically these are right-wing, you know, families involved with oil who are from, you know, rural states, and we're talking about white males who are what, all at least in their late 70s, if not older, you know? And so that's what you, these are the guys who are controlling the big money, too. Not just, these aren't just your caucus goers, you know, but they're people that have a disproportionate influence, and their thinking is not representative of where the rest of us are.
And their ability to say, like, you know what, I'm going to spend another $5 million just to keep this guy in the race another 2 or 3 months. And anybody who approaches him and says, hey, this isn't good for the party, he just goes, excuse me? Excuse, I mean, it's just their mentality is not going to be, they're not going to back down to the party. And then the irony is, on the front end, the money has hampered the Republicans, because you get the Tom Cottons, you get the Mike Pences, because you now have so much money sloshing around. I've said this many times before, that this is one industry, the Republican Party, and two different companies going at it. So you have on one hand, you know, sort of the Koch money or the establishment money, and then you have like the Koch brothers money and the Heritage Foundation money. And so they're all basically saying, like, hey, you don't have to drink from the same trough anymore. You can be your own independent company in the same industry of crazy. And it always seems to run down to the lowest common denominator.
That's right.
And so,
which in the end, you know, and maybe the Ted Cruz surge, such as it is proof of that, that they have, in the end, much like they've done to their own congressional caucus by the fact that they redistricted to a point that these guys are appealing to the craziest people in the world and don't have to appeal to the sort of general sentiment, they're basically leading their guys off of a cliff somewhere. Because in the end, you know, if you need to appeal to them, even any of the money we're talking about, you need to appeal to get through this, is not, again, representative of mainstream thought. So you have to twist yourself on a pretzel to take some of these positions, and then you know, which is what Mitt Romney had to do, and then you've got the Mitt Romney who ran in Massachusetts maybe would have had a shot in the national election.
Right.
But by the time he was done, you know, basically recanting every position of his, from supporting an assault weapons ban to being pro-choice to being in favor of gay rights, you know, and a variety of other things that he was in favor of, his health care plan, which became Obamacare, essentially. I mean, at that point, there was nothing left of him. And I don't see how that doesn't happen again, you know. So good luck and Godspeed.
Indeed. Now, you know, I wanted to sort of contrast this with what took place in the Senate a couple of weeks ago, when they had these votes on expanding Social Security, when they had a vote on Patty Murray's Health Families Act, which was to let workers earn up to 7 days of paid sick leave, and Brian Schatz's expansion of Social Security benefits and veteran benefits to both members of married same-sex couples. And I wanted to compare and contrast that, but we're actually out of time.
See, there I go with my big mouth again.
No. I mean, I think there was a lot to talk about that. I mean, we'll save this one, because, you know, and I'm going to talk to Adam Green about it a little bit in an interview that we'll play next week, because I just like what Mike Pence did in Indiana, even though he's backtracked, and what Tom Cotton did in the Senate in writing that letter that 47 Republican senators sent, just like those are going to be anchors electorally, what we saw in the Democrats taking these sort of largely symbolic votes, but they're putting themselves on the record, and that's going to hopefully start a part of a process that's going to help move things more progressive through the elections.
I'll say in 2 seconds, yeah, I think that we can go into more detail, or you'll discuss it with Adam. Essentially, what they're doing is starting to do what you and I have been hoping they would do for a while, which is making an affirmative case for government, which they haven't done effectively in 30 or 40 years of backing away. Now, there is no grand narrative there yet to explain why, you know, that should be out there to explain why deregulation hurts the economy and doesn't work, and why low wages hurt the economy, and that, you know, that all fits into why government needs to do more. But at least the individual pieces, like sick leave and like increasing Social Security and others, are starting to take form, such that maybe, you know, we will have the populist wing of the Democratic Party start to rule again. And if anybody remembers, that's when the Democratic Party used to win pretty often.
Indeed. Cliff Schechter, I will talk to you in 2 weeks. Happy Passover, happy Easter. Enjoy yourself.
You too, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, folks. What we're going to do at this point is we're going to head into the fun half of the program where Matt and Michael will come and take over for me. Next week, we've got interviews on prison, on pain, the politics around pain. Crazy, but true. Also, water usage in municipalities. What else? What was the fourth interview? Michael, Matt, what was the fourth interview that I did? Well, the first one I did for the for the vacation. I can't even remember now.
Was it – I'm listening to the show, but what was it? Not the one on water, was it?
No.
You already mentioned that.
Not the pain.
Not
the
pain,
water.
Not water. Not prison. Not
there was
Adam
one
Green.
Other. What was Matt, what are the pre-tapes you have?
I have to go look right now.
All right, forget it. Forget it. You know what, folks? You're just going to have to tune in. Why should you get an advance warning anyways? You won't know this difference. It's all new material. Just like you listening to the program. For the life of me, I can't remember what it was, but I've had a very difficult week. I'm so excited that I'm on vacation right now. Right now I'm on vacation. I'm looking at Matt and Michael, but I'm not really here. It's strange. Freaking myself out. So we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. The number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM us at Majority FM. And Matt and Michael, in yesterday, you should have sent me an email to remind you what the passwords are for the IMs. Yesterday, you should have done that. So do it today.
You didn't leave us the passwords.
Now,
what are we going to do?
Now you're really messing with the time-space continuum, because now it's all going to get real.
Soon, none of us would have been born.
That's right. And we'll be back live in a week.
Currently caller number.
Have a happy Easter, happy Passover, happy whatever it is, and talk to you later.
Sitting up the pain.